Welcome to this month's episode of New Moon Jeju. I'm Daryl Koontz.
And I'm Alexis Joy.
And on today's episode, we're going to talk about henyo diving is dangerous business, preparations for the 76th Jeju 43 Memorial Ceremony, and Jeju Rabbit Island becoming a little less rabbit. But first, a new international school is coming to Jeju. Did you hear about this, Alexis?
I did not. Well, I heard rumors, but so I don't have all the skinny on it.
I have no idea why this isn't bigger news, because it means more high-quality, high-paying jobs on the island and security at a time when the economy has probably been at its shakiest that I've ever seen in my whole time here. In like 15 years, the economy is worse now than it has been. And they're bringing a fifth international school to the JGEC, which is like really big news.
It's interesting because, you know, I'm not sure there's enough students to go around, but yeah. what is this new school called?
Well, have you ever heard of Alpharetta, Georgia? It's a city in Georgia, and their school is Fulton Science Academy Private School.
Fulton.
They are coming here.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. A press release states, because no one's really covered this. The school put out a press release, but I've only seen one other newspaper cover. Now, the institution specializes in STEAM education. And according very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And they plan to create a leading international school for students from kindergarten to grade 12. So it's going to be a big school. Yeah.
When do they anticipate they're breaking ground? Because I haven't. Yeah, when and where? Do they mention any of that in the press release?
No, there are some things that still need to be confirmed and approved.
Okay.
But the island has approved, like the provincial government, the provincial education office has approved their plan. And they have plans to open in September 2026.
Ooh.
So pretty soon.
As per anything on Jeju, I'll believe it when I see it.
And and aims to serve approximately 1,350 students.
No way. Absolutely no
big
way.
Big school. You don't think so?
No. No way. No.
So, okay, on that note, how many students do you think currently attend? Because there's four schools there now, right?
Yeah. Great question. Ooh.
Yeah. How many students do you think are currently attending?
Well, I think the numbers... Good.
Best figures I could get, so...
This is the best... Well, for sure, then... Oh, this is a really good question. For sure, the numbers have dropped over the last couple years. I'm going to say... Oh, this is like, if I say something and everyone's going to be like, that's the stupidest answer ever. We only have so many, you know. I'm going to go with all four schools have no more. There are no more than 1,500 students on this island.
In total.
This is a stupid answer. Yes, in total.
This is from the Jeju Development Center, which is the organization that's behind it.
Okay.
They said there's 4,080 students currently studying in that city, which seems like a lot.
Does seem like a lot. That seems like a lot. I don't know. But okay. That's very interesting.
And the whole plan is to attract two more schools on top of this one. So a total of seven schools they want to have in that city.
Absolutely
I don't know where
not.
Everyone's going to park.
Yeah, I don't know. I have never been more. Well, no, I get frustrated driving a lot, but just being down there, I'm just like, oh my God, there's nowhere to park. There's nowhere to pick your students up. Anyways, like I said, I'll see it when I believe it.
It's exciting. I mean, it's amazing how much of the schools have transformed this island, right? Like single-handedly almost.
Well, I mean, let's remember though, like, do we even have enough Korean students to grow around? You know, we call them international schools, but they're not really servicing a lot of international students, are they? It's a lot of people from rich families from Seoul and so on. So to imagine, I mean, maybe a program like this might get more international attention, but you know, I like I said, I'll see it when I believe it. I do know that one of the schools, I never know where all my friends work because I just never know. We don't talk about it, but I do know there's a really cool STEAM program at one of the schools that several people work at, and one of my friends always posts the projects on her Insta, and that's really cool to look at. So another school that focuses on something like that would be awesome.
Do you remember what the purpose of the whole JGEC was about? Like why they brought it here?
Well, wasn't in the medical center at first? No? Is that too far away?
It's part of a whole thing to develop the island, but the main reason behind the school was to prevent money from leaving Jeju of Korea, right? Like they wanted to keep all these kids from leaving.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, right?
And
I guess they've done a good job with that. Because I don't know.
Like the numbers are fascinating. Like between 2001 and 2006, the amount of money that was leaving the island, leaving Korea, went up from $1 billion to $4.5 billion dollars a year. Whoa. And apparently the JDEC has saved about $613.8 million dollars from leaving Korea. So it's not...
That's huge.
Which is why
I guess the government dumps enough money into that, you know, into that area. They put a lot of money down there.
Yeah, they do.
So, but I mean, again, like now, you know, all over the news and all we're talking about these days is the declining population. So where they think they're going to get these kids when there are just no kids, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
To be determined. Yeah. All right. Okay. All right.
So now on to our second topic, which is if you're listening to the program, you know, April 3rd. The JJ Massacre is a really important topic to us, and we are on the
cusp.
We are just a week away from the 76th Memorial ceremony that's going to be held at the Jeju 4-3 Peace Park, just outside Jeju City. Now the event's supposed to start at 8:40, but it really starts at 10 o'clock with the moment of silence that will be ushered in on the island with a siren. So siren, no matter where you are, if you hear something at 10 a.m. April 3rd, that is what it's doing. And this year's event is under the theme of Blow Spring Wind of JG of 4-3 Fly Seed of Peace, which is kind of a mouthful, but it's a mouthful, but
it's actually kind of poetic. Yeah, I was just about to use, yeah, it really is. It is a mouthful, but yeah, okay.
Now, last year's event was marred by controversy. If you remember, there was a protest of a handful of right-wing activists who took up shot at the entrance of the event to invalidate, essentially, the deaths of the victims. It is believed to have been the first ever protest of the memorial service, which has been held for, I think, about 20 years now. This year comes ahead of the National Assembly elections on April 10th. So yes. There has
very
been politicians
yep.
who have come recently to promote their candidacies and so forth. They've gone to the memorial and paid their respects there.
A lot of photo ops.
Yeah. So there may be somewhat of a politicization of this event, but I doubt it'll come too close to anything that we saw last time.
Well, and it might remind people that there was a 75th year anniversary, so it was a big one. And it, you know, if you listen to our podcast, it started with, you know, the banners being hung up all over Jeju, and then it sort of led into that protest. Isn't that right, Daryl?
Yeah. It was a North Korean refugee that become
right.
politician who made inappropriate comments that just kind of turned everything up on its end.
And got people all riled up.
I don't expect it this year.
Yeah, no, I don't expect it this year.
It's been much quieter this year.
Yeah, maybe the 75th was so big this year. They haven't even really, in my opinion, you know, we both follow all their Instagrams and stuff like that, but there really hasn't been a lot of information being shared about this year either. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know if that's deliberate or I really don't know.
So there hasn't been a lot of huge stories, right? Like the big thing is like whether or not President Yoon will come. Probably not. That's probably not really a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal in the fact that we'd like the president to come and to show his respects to this because it was a product of state violence, but he's a conservative and, you know, conservative.
I wouldn't expect him on this year and I wouldn't. Yeah, it doesn't seem to fit right before the election, you know?
So some of the big news that happened this year with 4-3 is that there's the first identification of Jeju 4-3 victims who were killed on the mainland. Mm-hmm. We talked about that previously, mm-hmm. and we pushed mm-hmm. put a post about that on our Instagram, so go check that out. There was also the positive identification of two victims who were killed on Jeju, which happens more often, infrequently. They do identify them, and they're the increase the number of bereaved family victims and victims themselves by 3,300 people. Oh. And of note is that they included two people for the first time who actually died outside the confines mm-hmm. of the massacre. And mm-hmm. When they announced that, they didn't give us any information on them. So I actually had to call up my sources at the foundation and be like, "What? Like, who happened to these people?" Right. And so, if you don't mind, I'll explain it a little bit. So,
please,
in May of 1956, which is like 2 years after the official end of the massacre, mm-hmm. A 13-year-old and a 10-year-old were killed with an explosive device in Namwan. They were like going through a farm field to get a cow, apparently, mm-hmm. and they came across this device, and it detonated.
Yeah,
and it's. I won't get into it, but it's really gory, like really tragic, the deaths of these people, these two people, and they were included in it based on the fact that they have previously included victims who died by finding ordinances. Mm-hmm, that were mm-hmm. part of the massacre, but this will pave the way for more people to be considered victims in the future. Right.
Agreed. And a good thing because it should be recognized. I mean, just because mm-hmm. the time period ended doesn't mean like accidents and incidents like that haven't occurred.
Yeah, exactly.
And their families deserve to be recognized as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to recognize, that's a very good point, because if mm-hmm. you recognize them as victims, then you can recognize their families as bereaved victims.
Exactly.
And that gives them access to services and money that they wouldn't have had been.
Especially as the males. Yeah. So mm-hmm. very interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I will be going to this year's event. So expect photos and, you know, some sort of coverage information from us there. Yeah.
Maybe a little less dramatic than last year's.
Yeah. And with that, let's go to our segment of Walking Jeju with JY. So now we have Walking Jeju with our very own intrepid JY. Thank you so much for being mm-hmm. with us again. It's so good to see you.
So good to see you too. Thank you so much for having me again.
Of course. You're always welcome. So what are you going to school us in today about the wonderful island?
Yeah, well, we're talking about which Olas to introduce, and I was thinking, like, should I go with the one that's most beloved by the hikers or, you know, by the order? And I decided that, you know, why don't we start from the most iconic and the very first Ole, which is Ole Route Number 1.
Oh, I like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like going in. So we're going to go in order from now on.
Yes. So as we go on, when we have enough archive, if the listeners are interested in walking certain Ole, then they can just look up and, you know, listen to the episode.
I love it. Perfect. This is going to be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So Route Number 1, this is the very first where Ole started, really, back in 2007. There was no Ole. And then fast forward 17 years later, we have 27 Ole trails, but this is where it all started. And it's all the way out in the East Coast, about 1 hour by car from the Jeju airport. And so when people ask, where should I start? I just say, you know, you can walk your Ole that's closest to wherever you're staying. But if you really want to find where the Ole started, then go to Route Number 1. This is iconic. You know, it has two volcanic cones or odems. And then after hiking the hills, then it's mostly really scenic ocean seaside walk. where you can have amazing view of the Songsan Sunrise Peak, which is the most famous, you know, Jeju's treasure. And when you hike the first part, when you hike up the Malmyeordam, then you can get a great view of the Songsan Sunrise Peak and also the Udo Island as well, way on the east side. Yeah, but what's very special about this part is that, you know, as all Ola do, it has a little bit mix of a little bit of hiking upward the hill and the beautiful seaside. And you get to go through really beautiful villages and you get to go through Jongdalli. Have you two been to Jongdalli?
I'm it sure I have, familiar. But I'm horrible with names. Both of us are like, sure I have.
So actually, Jongdalli is interesting because the meaning of Jongdalli is like the end of the land in the ancient world. So this is really truly the far east of Jeju Island. And it's a beautiful quaint little village with old salt flat farms. So when they used to farm salt from the field, and from here you walk the seaside and you finally get near the Songsan Ilchubo Peak. But right before you get to the Songsan Peak, there's the poet Yi Sengjin's historic site. Have you heard about this little walk?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's really scenic, really beautiful. But what's really significant about the little walk leading up to the Songsan Sunrise Peak is that it's the friendship trail with Camino de Santiago or the Way of St. James in Spain. Mm-hmm. And so the reason it's very important was Jeju Ole trails were founded by one woman, Seo Myung-su, and she was inspired by Camino de Santiago in Spain. And 16 years of developing the trail, we finally was recognized by the Spanish trail. And so, you know, they flew over their, you know, monument. And so when you go to this sea walk, you see the kind of a monument that symbolizes Camino de Santiago. And then there's the Jeju Ole's horse-shaped kansei right next to each other. It's pretty beautiful. And
it is.
I'll send you the photo of that two monuments kind of standing each other next to each other.
Nice.
How difficult is this trail, would you say?
Yeah, so it's 15 kilometers long.
Yeah, it's a beast. Yeah. I was gonna answer that for everybody. Let me just tell you, it's a beast.
it could be quite challenging if you don't know, you know, what to expect from Ole. So I'd say about middle level out of all Ole, but you know how difficult it is very subjective. So
yeah,
I'd say maybe 3 out of 5 stars, but depending on your ability, of course. But very rewarding because you get to hike up the, you know, the seaside and just look up the beautiful east coast of Jeju Ole.
I will say that the scenic coastal views there are just phenomenal. Underneath Songsan Ilchubo is a black sand beach that they kind of renovated and they cleaned up quite a bit. And if you're really lucky and you go at the right time, you can see a lot of henyo often sitting on the wide expanse of black rocks are often sitting there and relaxing or diving right off of that. That's one of the most cool spots, I think, that I've been able to see henyo at such a close distance.
And whenever I talk to anybody about the East Coast, I always say it's the least developed of the islands. Mm. So you can go out there and see an older Jeju that just doesn't exist anywhere else anymore, really.
Well, Daryl, that's interesting you say that. And maybe JY can join me on this. When's the last time you've been out there?
Oh, you're asking me personally? Oh. Yeah. You go first, JY.
No. Because it's not developed anymore. So people won't see that much anymore. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, and especially in Songsan-ni because there are these massive cafes. But I'll agree with you, Daryl, about the underdeveloped part is the henyo culture. It's not underdeveloped, but it's ancient. So they kept their ancient form, and the East Coast henyos are known to be the most tough because the currents in the East Coast is the fastest and the hardest.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so the henyo culture and the small village culture is still there, but everything that surrounds, you know, the developed areas, it's quite changed there.
Yeah, yeah.
When was the last time the you food, did this though,
is what was that? Mm-hmm. Sorry, Daryl, I'll cut you off.
No, I said, when was the last time did you do this trail?
Which one of us?
JY?
So for me, the last time I did it was in September of last year, because mm-hmm. we invited the Spanish ambassador and also a representative from Galicia mm-hmm. in Spain to kind of reveal the monument that gotcha. Symbolizes the friendship. So that's the last time I've been there. And then since then, I haven't gone back, but this is mm-hmm. a lovely time to just kind of, start hiking Ole again. And I definitely recommend.
Yeah, this time of year is a perfect time to start your trekking journey with Ole on course number one. Thank you so much, JY. That's super informative. I want to go now.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. And one thing I forgot to talk about, Mokwa Orem, Mokwa Hyugeso, you know, where all the squid is at.
Uh-huh. Hanging squid.
Yeah, hanging squid. Don't forget that part. I forgot to mention that. But Mokwa Resta or Mokwa Hyugeso.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
You want to get your stamp there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the midpoint stamp. Don't forget the midpoint stamp.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
JY, thank you as always. Thank you. I'm looking forward to these series.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited too. And I have to hike these trails again so I can bring you more stories.
I love it.
Perfect. Okay. Until next time. Ciao.
And now on to our next story, which is talking about how dangerous a job being a henyo is. You might have seen on our Instagram, and if you don't follow us on there, you should. But we put a lot of work into that. But recently, we were just kind of talking about some incidences and health of henyo, and there have been more than 100 health-related incidents involving henyo in the past few years, most of which were 35% of those incidents. Excuse me, that was a little fuzzy. Most of these incidents, about 35% of them, were relating to cardiac arrest. Yeah. So since we posted that on our Instagram, recently two henyo have tragically died, and both of them unfortunately died on the same day, which was March 21st.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I did. I actually saw one report, and then later in the day, I saw a second report about the second henyo that died.
Same. I saw the one come through, and I thought, wow, okay. Mm. And then the very same day, I was like, oh, this is rough. Go ahead.
One of them was a heart attack, and the other one, I couldn't figure out exactly what the cause was. I saw somewhere that it was a fall, but I also sort of implied that it was in the water, so I don't exactly know what happened in the second situation, but
read that it was in the water, and then she was taken out of the water into the hospital. Then there she was pronounced dead. So because of these ongoing tragedies, and of course this particularly sad day on Jeju, the Jeju government has started rolling out a program to aid this aging henyo population with hopes that providing extra services can maybe prevent some of these incidences. So this program will be an educational program, and it will be in CPR and other such training. When they're talking about training, I'm assuming it's going to be the CPR and a bunch of other health related classes is my guess. Did you also read that? Yeah.
It might be like, there's also like communication stuff that I think might be involved in this.
Right. So, I think not only with the health training, but one, I think especially for the older women, the Jeju government has started to hand out some smartwatches. They started in 2022 and they had given out 160 smartwatches, which will track their locations, their heart rate, their oxygen levels. And these are some of the more serious issues that affect henyo whilst they're diving.
Yeah, so the heart rate and the oxygen levels. The question I wonder is if, like, people on the boat, will they have access to that information, or is it just like mine?
They absolutely must, because the tracking their location, it must be connected to some sort of program, just to make, like, in my opinion, it just seems like a double aid of safety. Do you know?
That's awesome. Like, if you are really tracking awesome. Someone, and you're like, you can see their heart, mm-hmm. there's a heart palpitation, there's a heart mm-hmm. issue, or mm-hmm. like they're not getting enough oxygen, it just gives you so much more ability to like react. So I guess that's also what the training has to do too, because then you have to train the people.
Right. I think that's exactly, because it's not just slapping a watch on, you know, mm-hmm. somebody's wrist. It's like, okay, well, this is what this means. And especially uh-huh. the most of the henyo, as we've discussed numerous times, I mean, they're aging out. So introducing this new technology and the benefits of them, I think that's going to be a lot of the training, not, you know, be outside of the health and safety classes that they're introducing.
To be at the classes where they're educating the henyo on how to use the smartwatches.
Just kind of take a gander at that. I'd like to be one of the ones that get to see the data that they're going to start collecting. I'm guessing this data will be useful scientifically way down the road. You know what I mean? Like this is not just the benefit of the immediate here now. Mm-hmm. I think this collection of data, you know, how far down they are, you know, this sort of thing, what's their oxygen level at this, you know, I think this data is going to provide invaluable in the future.
So they gave out 98 of these watches in 2022.
Right.
And now they're going to give out another 160. I don't know why they don't just like, why don't they have thousands? Like a lot of them.
Right? I always feel a lot of times when I feel like when we read these articles and then we're interpreting them from their Korean to the English, I do sometimes I'm like, gosh, I wish they're kind of just more like blurbs instead of more information. And this is one of those things when you're reading and you're like, oh, I really wish we had more information about this. Like, I wish there was a reporter saying, oh, so what's the reason? With just 160 and not island wide. Mm. And I'd really like to know who are the first ones to be getting them. You know, which side of the island have they started with? You know, like all that sort of information is really interesting. But I guess we'll find out over the next, you know.
Yeah,
we'll see.
These are just from press releases, right? Like we're getting it directly from, we're not getting it from the articles, but the articles that you're seeing are from the same information we have. But there's been a lot of information coming out about the henyo at the same time. Like it just coincidentally, I'm tired, whatever. It was just coincidentally that all the henyo passed away, watch program, and the information about the causes of death came out just at the same time. And there's a program the Jeju government's trying to increase the number of henyo. Like
for years now they have. So this has been like a big thing, like a big recruitment to trying to pull in new henyo and to train them. I think, do you have some numbers on that? You're the numbers guy.
Yeah. Well, like, So in the last year, the number of henyo have dropped by 12%, which is quite a bit.
That's a significant number. Significant. Yeah.
So it dropped from 3,226 in 2022 to 2,839 registered henyo last year, by the end of last year. So essentially right now. Right. Mm-hmm. And some of the ideas that were floated at this mid-March meeting about how to improve how to increase the henyo numbers included creating a new foundation to nurture henyo, support stable early settlement, which I think was a retirement, which is a good idea, resolving barriers to entry, which is very vague, and establishing. What's your thought?
Mm-hmm. No, keep going. And
establishing an income stability network, which is also very helpful.
Very helpful, because I feel like any of these, just like, you know, farmers in America or across, you know, some sort of knowledge that if the crop, you know, the ocean crop is down this year, that you're not going to be neglecting your family. So I think that's a huge reassurance to henyo to know that it's a stable job throughout the years. You know, as it goes. And then, of course, you know, with Fukushima and people's fear of that, like, I'm sure there's people that are like, well, this isn't a good time to become a henyo, you know?
Right.
So I think that introducing that alone is a super huge reassurance. But I have the resolving barriers to entry. The government has recently done and more programs where you get to be a henyo. You can train for weeks to, you know, it's a commitment. You have to apply to it. You have to be chosen. And you have to commit to like the trainings. And I think first of all, this is really cool experience. for tourists and for just those of us living mm-hmm. here in Korea to get to experience something like that. But along with that program, I think it's the ability to go and check it out for Korean, to young Korean women to go and check out the program and to just be like, okay, I get to be a part of this, and to see what sparks, you know, like, does it spark an interest in you? Do you find that you're really good at this? Are you like, wow, I not only do I enjoy this, but I seem to be a very avid swimmer. I can hold my breath really long, you know, those sort of things. And I think the government introducing programs like this is like trying to draw people in and be like, come check it out. And while you're here, hey, do you want to stay? We really liked you. You did great. Would you like to stay in this program? So that's, I think, really, that's what they mean by the incentive, is like, how can we get you interested in this lifestyle and this, you know, and this job?
I saw recently that there was something like an experience, a annual experience that the government was promoting.
It's been going on for years. Yeah, well, I mean, of course, COVID, you know, COVID really just messed with everything, because you're like, oh, for years. But of course, it stopped at that time period. But prior, previous to that, I mean, it's been going on for years, but they've made it larger. So it's not just this tiny group of people. Mm-hmm. Now, really, if you really are interested, there's a good chance you can get in.
So a thing that's often overlooked is the fact that Hanyo are also farmers, right? Like, they only like do this half.
Half
the year or half the month or however you want to look at it. There's only so many days a month that they can go to the sea. So when they do things like stabilize them and they talk about Hanyo, do they like take into account the farming aspect of it too? Or like, well, there's just questions that I have that they don't answer at the moment. Right.
I mean, well, since it's a regulation about how many times they can be in the water, you know, I'm sure all of this is like a big package that they're looking at of how to make, you know, make it all sustainable. Because obviously the fish restaurants are the money maker. I mean, that's big money, you know. So, interesting anyway. So watch this. And I, again, just going back, the smartwatches is, to me, the most fascinating of this little news segment we brought to y'all. So for sure, we'll be keeping an eye on that and seeing if they release any more information, because that's really interesting.
I wonder if they will adapt other technologies. Like, why not?
Why not? Exactly. Like, why not make this safer and better and you know, informative? Yeah.
Well, I guess, why don't they have lights on their... I think they wear scuba outfits, which defeats the whole purpose.
I think speedboats can do enough with lights. I think there's reasons for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just talking now. So now on to our final story of the night, Rabbit Island. Alexis, are you familiar with Bumsam?
Bumsam.
It's an island off the south coast of Sogibo. It's the big one. You can see it by Waddle Gay.
Wait, really?
No. I believe that's, Bumsam.
No. Wait, don't...
So it's a UNESCO, part of the
rocky one.
What?
Not inhabited.
Yes. Well, there's only like three inhabited islands of the 150. It's not inhabited, right?
Right. Okay. I was like, humans. What? Yeah.
And its nickname is Rabbit Island. Do you know why?
I'm guessing a couple rabbits got booted out there and they've procreated like they are about to. No, I don't know. I'm just, spitballing.
So, yeah, it's part of the UNESCO designated biosphere reserve, and it's a national monument, right? Like, it's a really important ecological preserve. There's actually plants there that are very rare, and they only are like growing on that part of in Korea or whatever.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, but the problem is,
the rabbits are eating them all.
Yeah. Well, Jeju Islanders used to live on the island, right? It's a very small island, but Jeju Islanders used to live there in the 1950s. They brought goats and rabbits there.
Interesting.
Now, no one lives there anymore, and I doubt anyone has for decades.
Yeah.
But in the absence of humans, rabbits do what rabbits do. And
sneaky little buggers.
Rabbits have apparently taken over the entire island.
I would love to see this.
Me too. Right? But you can't go. But rabbits are wreaking havoc on the island's ecosystem, which is a problem because, like I said, it's a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve. The grass is being eaten. Rare species on the island have disappeared. The rabbits have been found in trees and feces everywhere.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
That's how many there are?
There's like, it's an island of what, 93,000 square meters. So it's not huge, small, but there's like, no one knows how many rabbits are there. Some say dozens, some say more than 100, but there's all these rabbits there. And the JG government has announced a 100 million won plan or $74,000 to de-rabbit the island.
Oh, what? Just let some people go and do what? I don't even understand that. Go let some people. Go let some people hunt and eat some good stew.
You'd be okay with that? Because I know in like New Zealand or wherever where they have, I think it's goats or sheep or something. Mm-hmm. And they literally hunt them with a machine gun from the helicopters. From the helicopters, right?
Yeah. Well, I think America does that too with wolves. Well, I don't want to speak out of turn. It's obviously hunting season is huge in America, and they have to cull, you know, you have to cull the animals. Yeah.
But the $74,000.
How will $74,000 be spent? Who is someone getting paid that to go hunting? I don't understand.
Well, they're going to capture a lot of people and remove, especially if it's like if it's 100 rabbits. It sounds like there's more than 100 rabbits. No one knows.
Sounds like there's way more. If we're talking about species going unchecked and rabbits in the trees, there's way more than 100 rabbits.
So they're going to capture them and remove the rabbits and put them in an animal protection center.
What the heck? What?
Mm.
Okay, I don't even. I have so many opinions.
But apparently Sagipo City has done this before.
Oh,
this is not the first time that they've worked to de-rabbit the island. Between 2002 and 2004, they had a project to get rid of the rabbits. And when they went there, they found out that there were no more goats.
In 2004, they found out there were no more goats.
Yeah. Assuming that the goats were removed from the island at that time. But I think that's I've always wanted to go to the island. I love stories like this. I love little
kind of so random. I'm a little upset. And this is, again, I really liked, why would you put them into an animal reserve where you're spending, I guess that's where all the money is going into.
Capturing them, right?
How hard is it to capture rabbits? I mean, just capture the rabbits. It's not that big of a deal.
I think it probably has to do with animal rights. Animal rights, because you could literally
no different than any other country that, like I says, hunts an over, when there's an overpopulation, you hunt them down and you use them, and there's rules to it. There's rules about how many you can hunt, whatever. But I mean, it's not as if there aren't hungry people on Jeju. I'm just saying.
You could buy a lot of poison for $74,000, right?
That's a whole nother thing. I mean, it's one thing to hunt; it's another thing to kill them off by poison. I don't approve of that. But there's nothing wrong with it. And rabbit tastes good. I mean,
I've always wanted to have rabbit. But if it was rats or mice, they would definitely just poison, right? But
right. So what's rabbits? Yeah. And if it's wrecking habit with diverse we're both so tired.
Diversity.
That's never to be seen again. I think you know, that's probably pretty important to reserves to, you know, conserve some of that plant life.
So now that brings us to the end of our episode of Me, You, and Jeju. Thank God. Otherwise, I'm going to be tripping over my tongue if we go on.
I know, my mouth feels like it's full of marbles right now. Okay.
Yeah. But that's not the last you'll see of us in the next little while. Expect a new episode, a special episode coming out later this month, an interview with Jeju's own rapper and musician extraordinaire, Woosaide. Which is yeah, great guy. Look forward to that.
Great.
And please leave us a review on Apple and Google Podcasts if you guys get a moment. That would be lovely. It helps us out a lot. And that's all. You got anything else to say, Alexis?
No, yeah. I think, again, you know, we sort of kind of stump for ourselves. But we do put a lot of time into our Instagram. We try to do current stories, current news through our Instagram stories. You can come check out if you just want, to check out some Korea wide, but we do try to focus a lot of just interesting tidbits in our Instagram. And then we always try to post some interesting posts as well. So give us some love. We would appreciate it mucho.
Our great media manager is Jocelyn Perry, just to give her the kudos amazing. That she's awesome.
She has helped us out so much. We have got, anyways, yeah.
Yeah, it's, and so our music is by Jason Lisco. Like I said, social media manager, Jocelyn Perry. Producing help comes from Daniel Doherty. I'm Daryl Coote, and with me, of course, is my wonderful co-host, Alexis Joy. Till next time, ciao.
Have a good one, J.J.